Welcome back, Postables, to another exciting episode.
And we have a surprise for you.
Are you ready for this, everybody?
All right, here we go.
Hey, Postables, you're listening to Deliver Me a Podcast, brought to you by Casey, Jess, and Cammy.
A special thanks to James Jandrish for letting us use the music on our show.
Now, sit back, relax, grab a Yoo-hoo and a stamp collection, and here we go.
Well, Martha, thank you so much for agreeing to chat with us this morning. We are so thrilled and so delighted that you're here.
I'm thrilled. This has been such a long time coming, and I really wanted to just find the right time to do this, and it felt like and the week before the show airs, just and I put the finishing touches on it yesterday with James Jandrish. And so, I thought this is just exactly the right time to do it, when I can, I can relax and really feel good that I know what you're about to see too. So,
right.
We're so eagerly anticipating this. It's been a long 3 years. Yes.
We have no words for how much we are anticipating.
Me too. I think so. It's been it's been a long run, and it's been I just can't believe it's been that long since it aired. Of course, it hasn't felt like that long to me, because I was in the process of working on it and writing it and prepping it and shooting it and editing and all of that.
Right, so, all this time.
Right. But it was the pandemic really made it important to be able to just stop and step back, and gave me some extra time to really think it through. And I think that was really, in a strange way, a very helpful situation, because sometimes things happen so quickly, you don't have time to, to really step back and get a more perspective on the story you're telling. And then I had an opportunity to really sit down and go through social media, which I really don't. I try not to, because it can either lift you up so much that you lose your ability to be self-critical about your work, or it can, discourage you, and then you're too critical about your work. So I usually don't watch those things, but I did try to see what people were saying that they wanted, and what questions had yet to be answered, what confusion still reigned, So I really sat down and got into some of the deeper things with our characters. And I think you'll see that this time.
Absolutely. We know it'll be worth the wait, so.
I hope so. I know you'll let me know.
All right. Well, let's dive right into our first question. So clearly you're a very gifted storyteller. And so we were curious if writing was something that you were interested in from a very young age, or did it develop more as you got older?
I always was a writer. I was always writing. When I was a very, very young, when I was in third grade, I remember writing my first short story and fell in love with the idea. And it was about somebody kidnapping Santa Claus, and how he sent them a secret coded message to turn the world upside down so that the man thought he was at the South Pole instead of the North Pole and would release him. And I don't know what I was talking about, but I loved it and I got an A. And so I said, I can do this. So I just kept writing.
That's very involved for a third grader.
Yeah. Well, then there was another disturbing one about, a plane crashing on a desert island. It was sort of a precursor to Lost.
Oh, there you go.
I wouldn't go there either. That was when the teacher wrote home to my mother and said, we need to have a conversation about your daughter. So I went from Christmas to very dark for a while there, but it all balanced out. So.
Oh, good.
Did you do a lot of writing in high school and in college, and just developing that skill?
I did. Most of the writing in high school were just really a lot of bad poetry about boys who wouldn't give me the time of day.
Okay.
But when I got into college, I started writing for the, there was an organization called Cap and Bells, and we could write our own plays and our own shows. And I started writing with a partner, Mark Lichtman, who is a composer. He ended up being the composer for all the music on Touched by an Angel. And he actually composed the music for Deliver Me. And Send Me Love Every Day and Send Me On My Way, Deliver Me. Well, you know, the song.
Yeah.
But it was Mark who wrote that brief little opening. And so Mark and I wrote music, some musicals at my college. And I fell in love with that. Fell in love with just putting words on paper and then hearing them and standing in the back of a room and hearing people laugh or cry is magical. I mean, mm-hmm. It's just an amazing feeling and a tremendous sense of power, actually. And so Mark and I worked together all those years, and every once in a while we come together and write another song or so just for fun. We had a really good time writing, and I realized then that that's what I really wanted to do. For a while I thought I'd be a singer, but I was good enough to sing with my group, but not good enough to pull it off by myself.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, you're speaking up Cammie's alley right here. Musical, yeah. And all of that.
Secretly, like, going.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All I did was on Saturday mornings, my mother made me dust and clean and wash the Venetian blinds. And so I would put on Broadway show LPs and sing along while I did all the housework upstairs.
Oh, love that.
And after my own heart, my background is in theater. So.
Ah, right. That's yep. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Very big on theater.
I bet. What have you done?
Oh, goodness. My favorites that I was in, I was Timon and Once on This Island, and I was Dolly and Hello Dolly.
Of course, I can see that.
I've also done Peter Pan, Bye Bye Birdie, Fiddler on the Roof twice. I love Fiddler.
Yeah.
Oh, my favorite one that I have yet to be in, but I love, is Wicked. I love Wicked.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's a good one.
Doing it. Yeah, we just have to keep finding ways to do those things that we love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's absolutely. True.
My children are a sometimes willing audience.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. My children are saying, "Oh, mother, not Rodgers and Hammerstein again, please."
Well, how did you get your start in the film industry?
Ah, well, that comes from my college. I was walking through campus and I wanted a milkshake. And I walked into the snack bar and I ran into a friend of mine named Peter Bergathon, who's a very, very highly respected neurologist now, and I think something of an epidemiologist as well. But at any rate, he was studying for his medical at the MCATs. He wanted to get into med school. And Peter saw me across the snack bar and said, "Martha, you've got to help me out. Please be the escort." And that was in the best possible sense of escort, host. For me, because I signed up to help be one of the hosts for this big seminar on arts and management and entertainment careers, and will you go and do it for me? And I said, "Oh, okay." So I walked in, and there was an alum who was writing from Hollywood, and he was writing a sitcom, and I was assigned to him. And I said, "You are the only person I know in Hollywood, and I am now going to haunt you constantly until you help me figure out what to do." And I graduated. I would write him, again, bad poetry, but I'd write funny things, you know, funny little notes, you know, about how I needed a job and how I wanted to, you know, how I wanted to get a break. And it took about 2.5 or 3 years. And one day I get this note, and he says, The guy who produced Carol Burnett and the Carol Burnett Show is doing a Broadway show, and he needs an assistant. And I told him about you, and you should go and apply for the job. So I did, and it was funny because he was in New York at the time, and I was supposed to meet him in his hotel room, which I don't recommend anybody do now. But I walked into I knocked on the door, and he said, "Come in," and he was on the phone, and he kind of waved me in and said, "Sit down," and I'm sitting there just waiting, and it was very clear to me that he had to be at the airport in less than 2 hours to catch a plane back to Los Angeles, and I looked around, and he hadn't packed. Oh. So I just got up and started packing. And he's on the phone. He says, "You're not going to believe this, but my new assistant has just started packing for me." And and that was that. I got the job because I didn't even know he didn't even interview me. He just saw that I saw what needed to be done.
Yeah, took the initiative.
Yeah. So then from then on, that was me. I started working for him. His name was Kenny Soames. And and he was part of that whole Carol Burnett group. And that's how I got to meet Carol and so many wonderful people who had worked with Carol and for Carol. And before I knew it, I was the kid in Variety. I got to meet amazing people, pretty incredible people. So.
Well, and one thing that's become very obvious is you never forget your friends, because mm-hmm. they're sprinkled all over the place.
Yeah, I don't. I think if you could see the other side of this room, I have a sign that says that quotes the poem that says, "My glory was I had such friends." And mm-hmm. I said, maybe that should be on my tombstone, but that is the best thing about me, is that I have wonderful friends, and that I'd be a fool to forget them. Mm-hmm. And I just have made so many along the way, but I also made a lot of good friends before I ever had one ounce of success in this business. And they are still part of my life. Mm-hmm. They are still part of my life. As a matter of fact, one of them has you every once in a while you hear Dr. Nichols, you know, whenever there's a hospital scene, mm-hmm. and yeah. you'll hear, "Dr. Nichols, please report to emergency or surgery or whatever." And that's one of my best friends from college, Dr. Gwen Nichols. And she has been the consultant on all of our anything medical. I would call up Gwen and say, "What's, you know, how could this be?" Or, you know, when Joe fell, you know, and lost without you, yeah. and Joe falls, you know, and I said, "Could this really happen? Could he really go septic? Could he?" You know, she said, "Here's what I need to happen," you know. And so she's always been a wonderful support.
Well, let's talk about some of those friends on Touched by an Angel for a minute, because we all love Touched by an Angel, and
thank you.
Know, there are so many things that we've seen kind of blend over from Touched by an Angel, especially going back and watching mm-hmm. those episodes. But one of the biggest things is how you use faith and spirituality. They play such big roles in Touched by an Angel, obviously, and even in Signed, Sealed, Delivered. Tell us a little bit about your method, about how you incorporate faith into your productions without going overboard and, as you've said before, being too preachy, because that's one thing that I noticed immediately when I found Signed, Sealed, Delivered. Mm-hmm. I said, "This is remarkable." I didn't know who wrote it. I recognized Eric because I had seen him on How to Fall in Love. And so I just started watching, and I was like, "This is remarkable. How does she do, whoever is writing this, how do they do it? How do they do such amazing themes of faith and spirituality without being too pushy about it?" Because I've seen so many, and they just shout in your face about coming to Jesus or repent and all of that. And I'm just like, "This is remarkable. How are they doing this?"
A lot of altar calls. I starting with Touched, I remember I had started working for CBS a long, long time ago because it was essentially the home network for Carol. So I found a lot of connections there at CBS. Wow. And then they started hiring me to, quote, you know, fix things or step in. Mm-hmm. And there was a show called Under One Roof. Mm-hmm. And I realized that this was a family, probably a family of faith, because there was a scene in it where they said the blessing, a grace before dinner. Mm-hmm. But the problem was, it was like, God is great, God is good, let us thank him for our food. And I felt like the script that I had been given to work with did not know how to show a family of faith. Mm-hmm. And so I said, that is what I know how to talk about, but I was already beginning with a family. Yeah. And so you start with the people, you start with their relationships, and you don't make religion it all about religion. You just incorporate it as part of who they are. And so I remember changing that to something, that prayer that the little boy, I had the little boy say it. And he said, he was really, really hungry. And I said, why don't you just say, thank you, Father, for this food. In Jesus' name, amen. And because he's hungry.
Yeah.
He's hungry. He wants to eat. That's what's true. What mattered was that the family had a way of sharing what I share, which mm-hmm. was our faith.
Yeah.
So I remember the network said, what did he say? I said, in Jesus' name, amen. And they said, well, but why would they say that? I said, because that's what you say sometimes from certain churches. And so they said, all right, because they weren't used to saying Jesus. They said, well, is this a show about Jesus? I said, no, this is a show about a family that prays before dinner. And that's mm-hmm. what they say. That's what's true. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that to me was the light bulb went on, that what you have to do is go to what's shared deeply with people's hearts mm-hmm. and work from the inside out. If you try to lay religion on top of something, then it's like you said, it's going to feel preachy. So then they, because of the in Jesus' name, amen moment, when Touched by an Angel became an opportunity and they weren't quite sure what to do with that, they called me because they said, well, call Martha. She goes to church or something. And so that's when I came in to look at the pilot that they had there, which I subsequently refused to work on because it was in fact that very thing that I didn't mm-hmm. like. And mm-hmm. And then they said, well, what if you started over? So I said, I will, but I have to. They said, but you're going to have to like create a whole new Bible for the show. And I said, no, there is a Bible for the show. It's called the Bible. And let's just go to what the Bible says about angels and stick with that, you know, that they bring messages, that they bring healing, that they bring, you know, sometimes they fight for you, that, you know, let's just look at what that is. And as a result, we dispensed with the funny stuff that they tried to do where they had Della Reese smoking and, you know, drinking and they were swearing and all of that. I said, we've got to get rid of all of that and go back to what they know, which is mm-hmm. angels don't need faith because they know what's true. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. so it became a story about people who just had already incorporated what they believed, what they knew to be true. So mm-hmm. it wasn't anything that you had to push on people. They just share what they knew. Mm-hmm. And so when we finally got to Signed, Sealed, Delivered, I thought, how do we do this with humans?
Yes. A little different story.
You don't always have
a different story, right? So we sat down and talked about it with the executives there. And I said, I think that I want to show that there is a divine purpose in all of our lives. Mm-hmm. And the letters themselves are metaphors for the divine purpose. And we don't have to say, God has a purpose for your life, and here it is on a letter.
Right.
What you need to see is somebody like an Oliver who is trying to find a purpose for himself, mm-hmm. and find a purpose for his work. I mean, here's a guy who subsequently became really, really rich, right? Mm-hmm. And he could have quit, but that's not his purpose.
Quit the post office? Love that line. Like, so, how dare you?
This was something deeper had to be accomplished by deliverance. So every word, in a weird way, if you go back and you look and see some of those words that we have in this show, they will recur. And the sense of delivery, deliver me, to be delivered. You don't have to hit people over the head with it. It's going to resonate with the people who know what I'm saying. You know, like I was thinking the other day, one of my favorite moments, because I love to write lyrics, is, she's Miss Special Delivery. Yes, she's our post office queen. And from Rocky Mountain to Field and Fountain and every zip in between, right? The words Field and Fountain, if you grew up in my church, you'll recognize that that phrase comes from joyful, joyful, we adore thee, you know, field, da, 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 field and fountain, flashing.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
So there are words that are going to resonate with people who do go to church or are people of faith, and yet they're still going to work in the real world, mm-hmm. you know, to folks who are just watching the show. And if you can mm-hmm. do that, then you are not preaching, you're just sharing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yes. And I know, like, the three of us, I mean, we all have different faiths, but we do have, you know, we are people of faith. And so that has been something that's come up in our conversations. Like, well, like, I remember hearing Joy in the Morning in From the Heart. And I was like, oh, that's in the Bible. I remember that specifically. So little different things that you've incorporated. We've picked up for sure. Mm-hmm. And I think the most profound one for me personally is the Christmas episode. When they had, I think it's Rita who says, oh, we forgot the most important thing. And it was Jesus. And I was like, the theme of this episode is the fact that during the holidays, we get so busy with everything else going on. You know, we have the pageantry, you know, we have the church stuff, we have decorating at home and the dinners with family and stuff. And so sometimes we forget about the most important thing and the reason for the season, which is Christmas. And that just resonated so much with me.
We had a huge conversation about it.
Yeah, it was really? It was incredible because, as my kids are getting older and both my in-laws and my family is here in the same town. And so, like, things just get really, really busy. So it was a great reminder, to keep Christ at the center of Christmas, especially when things get really crazy. So I just loved how that theme just popped up. Like, I wasn't thinking of it when I was watching the movie, but man, when that popped up, I was like, whoa, you're right.
You know, I'm so glad you remember that one. The it's a perfect example for somebody who is asking this question, how do you get the message out if you want to? And I think the most powerful ways to get messages like that out are if you put the blank out there and let the audience fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. Someone had had a little ornament and said, well, we don't want to forget Jesus is the reason for the season. You know, that just makes me crazy.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But if you say, don't forget the most important thing, and then the audience or the viewer is going to go, what is the most important thing? Oh, it's the, oh, that's Jesus. Oh, that's Christmas. Now they're making the connection, and that comes from something within themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's powerful, I think, if you can accomplish that. And sometimes you can, sometimes you don't, but it is a tricky line to walk. But I think, and of course, you have these incredible actors who know how to, what I say, throw the line away.
Mm-hmm.
So she didn't say, don't forget the most important thing. No, don't want to forget the most important thing. No, and that's what makes it work, is that it's an organic moment for them.
It's authentic, for sure.
It's authentic. Exactly right.
Yeah.
All right, one more question about Sign, Seal, about Touch My and Angel.
We moved on, yeah.
I know this is going to ask you to pick one of your favorite children, but do you have a favorite Touched by an Angel episode?
Wow. I would say I have a couple. One is the episode about slavery in the Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
That was very powerful for me for a number of reasons. Number one is that I had a friend, Sonia Hodson, who had worked on the show, and she kept saying, you really need to look into this. You really need to explore this issue. And I was terrified. It was so fraught and deep and dense. And I thought, I'm not, Lord, you know, I'm not capable of doing this. And I had to do a lot of research. I met with a lot of people. I met with a number of senators in Washington at the time who were working across the aisle. They were collaborating, Democrats, independents, and Republicans all working together. I remember those days. And it was a wonderful thing to have them all support me with the information I needed to write, I think, one of my most profoundly challenging and satisfying, ultimately, and gratifying episodes. And we did screen that show in Washington for a joint group, a session of Congress. And then that day, they passed the Sudan Peace Act. So how much more could you hope for? That said, I will say that the window opened for me on what the possibilities were for something like Touched by an Angel. The very first season, and we didn't even know if we were going to survive on Touched at that point. We were all living on the top floor of the Holiday Inn in Salt Lake City, and our offices were on the first floor of the Holiday Inn in Salt Lake City. And they were so not sure that we were going to survive that my office still had the bedboard glued to the wall. So if you walked in and sat at my desk, there was like a bedboard glued to the wall of it. I mean, all they did was just move the typing. So we weren't sure what our future was. I walked out one afternoon, and lo and behold, there's Gregory Harrison playing tennis with Tree Williams, if I recall. And I had worked with Gregory on a show called The Family Man for a season. And that's how I got to know him. I had actually known his mother when I had lived for a while on Catalina Island, where he grew up.
Yes. Yeah.
So we had kind of bonded when we started working together. And then I saw him, what are you doing here? What are you doing here? And he said, I saw your show and I want to be part of it. And I said, what would you do? I mean, I honestly, he took me aback. He said, I want to do a show about homelessness. Mm-hmm. And so that show about, he said, people don't realize, you know, how subconsciously so many of us just assume that a homeless person did something to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was somehow a strange choice or a failure of character. And he said, and I want to really explore that. And I said, you got it. And I sat down and worked on that episode. I worked with my dear friend, Bob Colleary, who worked with me on Facts of Life. You know, another friend connection, you know, you hold on to him as long as you can. So Bob and I worked on that homeless episode, and it was one of the most powerful episodes.
It's my favorite.
Is it? Mm-hmm. Very, very, very powerful. And then Gregory took the money that he earned from that show and applied it to Habitat for Humanity and build a house with it. I mean, stunning. The building blocks from just meetings, you know, again, right. Walking out. I didn't get a milkshake, but I was, who knows why I was walking by the tennis court. There it was. But that became something that we started doing on Touched. We started reaching out to the star first and saying, what do you care about? What matters to you? What, mm-hmm. you know, what sort of show could we write about that would interest you? And so things like that became a formula that we had and really attracted a lot of great people. So then, of course, when we did Science Hill Delivered, I couldn't imagine anybody else for Papa Joe.
Yes.
Oh, gosh, no.
Yeah. Gregory shared some of that story when we had him on the podcast for an interview. So.
Oh, did he? Oh,
a yeah. little bit. Yeah.
You remember it the same way?
A couple of differences, but it's fun getting both perspectives.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And that episode of Touched by Angels, one of my favorites as well. It was, like, I try not to judge a series too harshly on its first season, but it was that episode. And I was like, this show is going to be great. Like, that was the one that made it for me. And we're like, because it was so powerful, like you said, especially when Monica's washing his feet.
Oh, my God.
But yeah. you know, Jess, that's a perfect example to answer Cammie's question, which is, how do you incorporate those messages? Mm-hmm. Somebody who doesn't know the Bible is still going to be moved by the fact that she humbled herself to say, I am sorry. I made it, you know, please forgive me. And I'll never forget that moment when I realized what had to be done. And it came from, again, one of those moments. I did my research. I went to the Union Rescue Mission in Los Angeles. I took a tour, talked to the director. And just as I was walking out the door, I turned around and I said, what is the number one complaint or problem that a homeless person has? The one thing that if they could change other than, you know, not being homeless. And he said, their feet. They're on their feet all day. They're walking and walking and walking, and they have terrible foot problems. And that was the last thing I heard before I walked out. And that became the nexus of the show. So, you know, it's God knows what he's doing. I just have to shut up and listen.
Absolutely. Yes.
I mean, we've lost you, Cammie. She's
gone. Cammie's gone.
Getting emotional here.
I know. I do. I get very emotional because it is such a humbling thing to be used by God and somebody will, you know, we all know these people who are going to say, oh yeah, right, that's what she thinks. But I'm telling you, when you sit down at the laptop where I am now, and you just sit there with a completely empty screen, and you close your eyes and you say, okay, Lord, tell me what to do. You know, it wasn't you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Nobody can tell me that this all came just from little old me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's huge. And nobody can tell you that you didn't have a supernatural experience. Nobody can ever tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just so humbled that show was 1995, I think we did
something
that show.
Like that.
Can you imagine how long ago, and to still be able to have the opportunity to share, you know, right up to the very last words of the show you're going to see next week, you will know there was, you know, something really, you know, anointed.
Yeah.
So.
Well, may we say on behalf of all the Postables and the Touched by an Angel fans and anyone who has had the privilege of tasting of your work, thank you for listening. Because it's one thing to receive the message, and it's a whole nother thing to take action with it. And so you have been helped, but you have also been the instrument.
To obey is better than sacrifice.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Well, it's, you know, what else would I be doing? I mean, I don't know. I was a bank teller, and I don't know what, I had all kinds of crazy jobs in my life, but this was the one that I really wanted. And the other day was saying, I said, I'm just sitting here counting my blessings. And she said, well, sometimes you should count your dreams. And she said, think about all the dreams that you had that, you know, came true. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, this is it. I, you know, how much better does it get? So anyway, can I take a moment to just start talking about these wonderful actors that talk about blessings, the actors that I get to work with?
Please.
Yeah, actually.
It's one of our questions.
tell me your specific questions and then I'll get into the weeds.
Kristen had mentioned that we needed to ask you what your favorite story is about a big name that you had met in business.
Oh, golly. Yes.
And then
I don't even know where to begin on that one, but it's so overwhelming. I mean, probably Rosa Parks, just to the night before she was on Touched by an Angel. To be on your knees in a hotel room praying with Rosa Parks.
Wow.
Again, how does that happen? You know, my greatest dream was to meet Carol Burnett, and that happened so early on. I thought it can't get any better than this. And then all the wonderful people that I met along the way and people who I actually got to become friends with. Huge, but somebody asked me once to sit down and make a list of all the famous people. And I think because I worked in variety, I get to meet some remarkable people. Mm-hmm. And, you just go on, you know, Liza Minnelli, Sammy Davis Jr., Steve Allen, Dolly Parton. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And you think, oh my gosh, you know, how did this happen? And from each person, you just take something. And almost every single time it's something about how to be more professional and better at your work.
Yeah.
I never got an autograph though. I'm not one of those. I don't have, if you came to my house, I don't have one of those Hall of Fame things where, you know, I'm there with, I don't know, Milton Berle. You would not have any clue that I had anything to do with show business if you mm-hmm. came to my house.
Yeah.
I just hope I don't forget them when I get old.
Right. Right.
So jumping specifically to our lovely SSD actors, what is one trait about each of them that makes them the perfect choice for their character?
Then you can gush.
Well, it's funny because it's all about the casting process. So and also the fact that, and I'm sure they've all told you, each character is some form of me, I guess is fair to say. So Oliver was something of the technophobe and more than that, just the, sort of, they all called me on Touched by an Angel, they called me Conan the Grammarian. I was always really specific about making sure, even on scripts nobody else was ever going to read, I wanted the comma in the right place and the grammar correct. And so I knew we had to have somebody who was very specific about getting things right. So there was, they wanted me to interview a number of different people for Oliver. And did Eric ever tell you the story about how I interviewed him for the job?
Yes.
He went into a little bit of it. Yeah.
Yeah. On the cruise ship where I hid in the closet.
Yes. And I think he was on his way to
China.
China. Yes.
Going to China. I was going to Alaska and they were trying to clear out the whole cruise ship because you all had to go for your practice run on evacuation or something. Everybody had to go out and wear their little life suits and be counted. And I realized I only had this tiny window to talk to this guy, Eric Mabius. And I just hid in the closet so that when they checked the rooms, they couldn't see me. So I'm literally like this. And he and I got into some serious conversation about philosophy and the Kant's categorical imperative, or I can't remember what it was, but we're sitting there having this philosophical discussion while you know, they're blowing horns, and three horns means jump ship, or I don't know what they were saying, but the bottom line was he and I got into such a philosophical conversation about the meaning of life, and I went, That's it. This is the guy. You know, this is the guy. So then we had Kristen had sent in a tape and to read for Shane. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that she was the first person that I saw. It was like the problem, the best problem to have. Mm-hmm. She nailed it immediately. And she had this incredible confidence as if I'm going to get this job. And she had red hair at the time. And my hair, you can't really say, well, my hair is sort of red. And so I kind of saw myself in her almost immediately on this tape. And she read it just as I had heard it in my head. And from then on, tragically, everybody else couldn't measure up. And then we still needed to bring her in person. And they said, she's coming in 5 minutes. And I said, okay, let me just run to the ladies' room. So I ran down the hall to the ladies' room, and here's this blonde walking in to the ladies' room. And I went, it's you. And she said, oh. And I said, it's me, Martha. And we just, again, it was just immediate connection. And you need to know that you can connect with the actors, no matter whether they're perfect for the role or not. You need to know that they will trust you to say, don't do that, or do that more, or trust me and let me change your, you know, out, your wardrobe, or cross mm-hmm. your legs. Or, you know, they need to know that you're watching out for them.
Mm-hmm.
And we just, so we went to the bathroom together, and by that time, you know, what more could we have done?
No better bonding experience.
Right. and told the rest of the folks, you know, basically this is a done deal. I'm just, you know, so, I'm sure Crystal and Joe, Jeff have told you all the backs and forths of how that happened with them. Mm-hmm. But I'm a great believer in going against expectations. And when this gorgeous woman walks in and just, and I said, wow. And then she says, I don't know what I'm doing here. And I said, oh, I don't know what she's doing here either. and then she read that one line, and it's from the pilot. You guys will probably remember it better than I will, but it was when she said about, somebody said, you know, Rita, what it's like when you fall in love and nobody understands. And she's, oh yeah, I know what it's like when you're in love with somebody, but not really, but you know, sort of, kind of, you know. I can't remember what that line was, but no one had gotten that. She had the complete vulnerability with that one line. And that's when we knew who Rita was. And she could not be separated from Rita after that. And then when we brought Jeff in, then it was a done deal, because the two of them, they were like old pals already.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you can write a great script. You can have a great team of people producing, you know, a great production team. But if you don't have that lightning in a bottle with those four actors, you don't know, it doesn't matter.
And yeah,
they right. just came together like butter.
Yes, they are. They just, the pairing, the four of them, it's just such magic on screen.
Chemistry.
And the chemistry just definitely shows. Oh, for sure. My goodness.
It sure does. It really, really does.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Is there a particular movie or storyline from A Sign Sealed that is the most meaningful for you now that we've done so many?
Well, I know that everybody says Impossible Dream. Everybody loves Impossible Dream. And that really meant a lot to me. I felt strongly, you know, there was sort of a precursor story right before that one.
Wow.
With the same characters. But I really felt, I think it was important to show people that you don't get every, I didn't want to tie it all up in a nice happy bow.
Yeah.
In the first right. episode, to show that, because that's what happens with people. You know, it's like Eric, or Oliver is married, and he just didn't, you know, we needed that tension for Oliver to keep not just this tension between him and Shane going, but also to show that this happens to real people and people of faith. Mm-hmm. So that's something that just didn't get solved easily and immediately. And the same thing here, that girl wanted her mom back, but mm-hmm. it didn't look like it was going to happen. And she had to find a way forward. Yeah, and I think that was the best possible thing about that first episode. But then I kept thinking, what if, you know, what if there is a solution to that? And what if you don't give up? Mm-hmm. So that was very powerful for me. And I've always loved that song, The Impossible Dream. And mm-hmm. and I just was feeling particularly patriotic that month, I guess. So that I saw that in my head. I just saw this woman walking across the desert and hearing that song. And one of the most powerful, I choke up even now, is to see her looking up and waving, and we got Cammy again, waving. And I just think that's the best of America. Mm-hmm. And if I'm going to stop and say one thing that's even remotely political, it's that never once in that movie do you ask if anybody was a Democrat or a Republican. Mm-hmm. All you know is that it was the right thing to do and everybody came together to make it happen. And so when that helicopter picks them up and, you know, and they say, you know, we've got her, oh, you know, yeah. I wrote it and I cried. So I love that one. The one about Truth Be Told is very powerful because of my own experience, mm-hmm. as someone who discovered that my biological father was someone besides the father who raised me. Oh, Cammy, surprise, operator, hello.
I did not know that about you. Oh my goodness.
That has been a theme through my life of discovering things, sensing things, knowing things that weren't quite right, something was a little off. I will say that I had the two greatest dads in the world, and I was blessed to know both of them, mm-hmm. and they were best friends. Mm-hmm. So they, right up to the last hours of Joe Williamson, they were together as friends, and they taught me the meaning of the word forgiveness. Mm. So, you know, they were both men of God. And again, that just tells you how grace works in the mm-hmm. lives of people who are willing to humble themselves in the sight of God and then allow themselves to be lifted up.
Yeah.
So, wow. So for me, it's about realizing and recognizing that as much as it always will matter that I was raised by three amazing people who also had their own serious issues, it doesn't matter. I did not go off on a great journey to discover who I really am, mm-hmm. because I was blessed by the time all the truth was told that I was blessed already to know that I'm a child of God. Mm-hmm. So that's what matters. You know, that's what matters. And I don't think I wasted 2 minutes worried about, you know, fighting for anything to be, you know, revealed unto, you know, it wasn't what was important, that we loved each other, that we forgave each other, that we were honest with each other, that we didn't carry these secrets around anymore. Those are the things that ruin a life. And I just wanted to go forward. And like anything else in life, the mistakes that we make, the experiences that we have, good and bad, can all be used for good. You know, all things work together for good to those who love God. And so I really feel that the gift to me has always been being able to take all those things and turn them into a story that's going to lift somebody else up. You know, do you know how many people wrote to me and said, that's my story. That's my story. That happened to me. And you don't realize it. You think you're the only person in the world that this happened. No, you know, Mm-hmm. And I started to say that this happened to, but I'm not a victim. It didn't happen to me. You know, it just happened. Mm-hmm. And here I am. What am I supposed to say? I wish it hadn't. Mm-hmm. So this is, that was something that I wanted to explore with Oliver. Mm-hmm. And to realize that he had invested so much into being an O'Toole. And yes. Then discover that he wasn't an O'Toole, or maybe he's more of an O'Toole than ever, because he has to work for it and think about what that means. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so there's your scoop.
That's an incredible scoop. Yeah.
And I love that verse, especially to them who are the called according to his purpose. So that purpose part is so important, because, you know, a lot of times we are kind of like in the state of like, but, you know, all things work together for good to them who love God according to his purpose. So it's not necessarily all the things that are, everything's going to be great because we love Jesus. It's just that things are going to be woven in such a way that even if we go through these hard times and these hard difficulties, in the end, it's all going to work out according to God's plan for us. And, you know, with your story, I mean, had that not happened, we wouldn't have had the storyline that was so impactful for so many people. So that just means, it just means so much, you know?
Thank you. Thank you. Well, it means a lot to me.
Well, and how funny that you would say woven, Casey, because I don't know if you know this or not, Martha, but on our podcast, you have been affectionately and honorably dubbed the Master Weaver.
So sweet.
Because everything is just woven together so beautifully, and the coincidences aren't coincidences, but everything still makes sense in a realistic manner, but they're profound. And yeah, we constantly say, here's Martha's writing again, Master Weaver. We say it all the time.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's what so makes it so fun to write these shows, you know, really, really fun. And I have a great big dining room table, and I have little 3x5 cards. You know, I'm talk about technophobe. I cannot move things around on a screen, and I need to put it on the table, and everybody eats in the kitchen while I'm writing a script. all the cards are out on the table, and I move them around, and it's so satisfying, particularly when I finished an act, to just scoop all those cards and put them down and see, and I keep scooping after act, but you can really see it, and you can see all these little moments that can come back and be played again. Or there's a lot of little and a lot of little Easter eggs I have. It'll be interesting. I'd love to talk to you after you see the show, because I've made an extra special effort this time to put a lot of Easter eggs in the show, and by my count there are either callbacks or Easter eggs at least 20. So it'll be interesting to find them.
Okay.
Postal detectives.
We got to keep a tally.
Yes.
Right. That's right.
I call 20 and you get a pair. Yeah.
The honor of catching them all. So Martha, what would you say has been the most challenging part? You've kind of talked about how it has been challenging. What would be the most challenging aspect of writing and producing Signed, Sealed, Delivered for you?
I think the most challenging was that we never knew if we were coming back.
Mm.
So every show, I mean, we knew we had an order for 10 episodes. So there was an arc there that we were able to create before we aired the first one and take it to Hallmark. And we said, the first two will be this, the second two will be this, the third. And we really had it all pretty much planned out where we would land by episode 10 after the pilot. So that would be the 11th show, basically. Mm-hmm. And then we didn't know if we were coming back. And at that point, I actually had said to Hallmark, it was a real pleasure. Thank you very much. You know, we really didn't know. Mm-hmm. We did the Christmas episode was so beautifully and well received, but I actually put in that angel in the Christmas episode, just to sort of a wink to everybody, because I thought that would be the last one.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to get a little supernatural here because we probably won't be coming back. Then you do another one. And so every time it was trying to, how can I push the emotional football down the field with our characters, and yet give us some sort of satisfaction if we don't come back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it's always been that way. And that's been hard. I mean, if you look at To the Altar,
mm-hmm.
perfect example.
Yeah.
Perfect yeah.
example. We just didn't know if we were coming back. Now, knowing that you were coming back, for example, like the Treasure Box, we knew we were coming back for another episode. So I could go a little off book there and try something really interesting, which mm-hmm. I thought, by the way, if I had a favorite show that actually sitting there writing, it was the Treasure Box. And oh, I wish I had 2 hours to do that show, because all the things we had to cut from
the letters
are heartbreaking. I mean, someday maybe I'll just, you know, when it's all over, we'll do a reading of the whole thing. Cause I did, I brought Eric and Kristen into my hotel room when I finished it. And just the two of them and I sat in the hotel room, and they read it for the first time aloud so I could hear it. And they didn't know what they were about to read. Because I wanted, if it was working, I wanted to see, mm-hmm. I wanted them to understand how it felt to read these letters, not knowing when those letters had been written.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was so much more to that. But that's, you know, that's the, if you want to know what's challenging, it's killing all off those babies, you know, really. It's not ever all going to make it onto the screen.
I wanted to see a full movie of To Whom It May Concern. That was the one I was like, I want a full movie on this one.
But I think, you know, to Hallmark's great credit, they recognized that we had so much more to say in an episode, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really when we realized what we could do with more time.
Mm-hmm.
And that really made a huge difference in the storytelling. So it became something, you know, it became something different in a way. We grew. We may not have known if we were ever coming back. But man, did we take advantage as a result of that next hour.
We got the audience. Let's do it.
Absolutely. Well, I think one burning question that we all have, what would you say with what five words would you describe the vows we have made? Without any spoilers, obviously.
Made.
Martha wins the game.
There you go.
It can be a phrase. It can be just five adjectives or five separate words.
You know, I would say the vows I have made. That... This is, I don't know if you know that my husband had a stroke in the middle of the pilot.
Oh, no.
So when we were shooting the pilot, the last few days of the pilot, I got a call that on the phone from my husband. And he said, and again, it's one of those moments. I was getting a massage, a desperately needed massage after 5 or 6 weeks of every single day working.
Yeah.
And I went into the massage room and put my robe on the thing and forgot for the first time in my life to turn the phone off. And it rang in the middle of the massage. And something told me to answer it. And that was my darling husband, John. And he said, I said, I think I have to take this. You know, I could have ignored it, but then he said, hi. And I said, what's up? And he said, I think I'm having one of those things. And I said, what? He said, you know, when you can't move your arm or your leg. And I said, I think you're having a stroke. And he said, yeah, I want that. And I said, John, you know, and he was on a mountain in Colorado. He was in a house, but nevertheless, I said, is the door unlocked? And he said, I think so. And I said, you need to go to the bathroom and take an aspirin. I don't know if that's good medical advice or not, but I had read that somewhere. And I said, go. And he said, well, where is the bathroom? And I went, oh no. Trouble. So the short version is that Brandy Harkonnen, my dear colleague, was upstairs in that hotel, and I called her and I said, you got to take over, and I'm getting on a plane. And so I ran to a plane and made it to Colorado, and he had a massive stroke. And by the grace of God, again, somebody was driving down the hill, the ambulance was lost and they took him up, but you know, all those little moments. But he was significantly affected by it, and continues to be to this day. And yet he and I had worked on Touched by an Angel. That's how we met. We got married, you know, during Touched by an Angel. And he had been my best friend before we got married. He was my best supporter and protector. And so here I was feeling totally out, you know, doing a show without him in the background, at least, you know, being able to, you know, to read a script or give me notes or support me or give me advice. And yet the best of him was always there with me, which was his wisdom and his absolute love. I mean, for the first few weeks, he called me Julie, which was the name of his prior wife, previous wife. Oh. A perfectly lovely lady, but nevertheless, you know, so we knew we were, you know, he had a long, long journey to make, and I could have quit Science Hill Delivered right then. Mm-hmm. And yet he said, you know, the show must go on. This will be, he said, he had to learn to walk again, and he had to learn to, you know, read again, and he had to learn to do all sorts of things again. And he said, but I have to make those moves. I have to lift those weights. I have to take those steps. You can't do those for me. But what you can do is carry on with the things that we love to do. Mm-hmm. And so when I think about the the vows we have made, the vow that he made to me to support me, and the vow that I made to him to keep going and honor our marriage and our relationship and our family, my darling girls who were, you know, essentially lost a lot, you know, our whole life changed and, you know, in a minute. But that there was still work to do. And he said, the best way I can support that is for me to get as good as I can be, and you to continue to be as good as you can be, to show our children that this is how you carry on in adversity. And so that has been, over the course of Signed, Sealed, Delivered, a message that I continue to try to share, that there was the adversity. You do walk through the desert. You do look for the impossible dream. You do try to find what it is that makes you an O'Toole. You know, you do force yourself to open that letter and find the $20 bill from your dad, even if you're angry with him. You do find a way to tell Norman that you're in love with him. You do carry on. You don't give up. As painful and as hard, you know, Oliver was ready to give up because he thought that Shane had given up on him. And yet he still carried that little napkin in his breast pocket. Mm-hmm. You know, the things that I carried of my husband, knowing that I thought I'd lost him, but I haven't. You know, it's different, but I haven't lost him. And that those are the things that you try to translate and find ways to share with the audience that's counting on you to be honest and true about life. That's why things don't always wrap up in the happiest of bows. Mm. And that's why I think when we talk to the vows we have made, it there is something we, I mean, obviously you've seen Shane, at least from the back in a wedding veil, you know, you've seen, you know that, that I think that if we didn't know what was coming with Hallmark, we might have attenuated that. We may not have, you know, we may have waited a bit longer to get them married, but we all have waited so long. We waited so long just to see them kiss. So why, you know, there are plenty of stories to tell with two married couples in the DLO.
Yes.
And, there's even so, more to tell.
Oh my goodness, yes. So there was something truly about saying the vows that Norman and Rita made reflect the values that of this show, the vows that Oliver and Shane will make mm-hmm. will reflect something so unique and special about them and about this little family that was created and that family carries on. Family presses on. Family finds new ways and it may not always be the dream that you started with, but mm-hmm. it is all things work together for good to those who love God and are called according to his purpose. Mm-hmm. And we are all living, you know, in God's purpose right now, the very best we can. And I hope that's reflected in the show. So,
yes.
I don't think there's a better way to end.
I was just thinking the same thing.
Wow.
I am so completely touched, if you'll pardon the pun.
Well, you guys are great, and it has meant the world to me to hear so much about how much you have taken from the show, how much you've given to us by just supporting us in so many ways, and to support the actors on the show. I could not have been blessed with four better, more professional, more accomplished, more loving actors and friends. You know, everybody says, oh, we're all just a family. You always hear that on shows, but yeah. This really is, you know, it's really an amazing family. And we get together off screen and do stuff, you know, and that's mm-hmm. really important that we've, you know, so I have these two wonderful families. I have my little nuclear family with my husband and my dear children. And I have this wonderful family with signed, sealed, delivered, and then the broader family of all those postables. And they're not going away.
No, they're not. Yes. Trust the timing.
Timing, exactly.
Timing. Yes.
We're here till the cows come home.
Oh, I don't think I have a cow in this next one. I should have put a cow. All right. Well, all the more reason to push for the next one. So.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for this chance to be with you. It's just been a real blessing. It's a great way to kind of finish up, you know, the long weeks of preparation. And I can't mm-hmm. wait to hear what you have to say.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Martha. This has been wonderful.
Your joy. Bye.
I don't know about you guys, but that was profound.
That was, wow.
No words, we're just speechless.
We are. It just proves that she earned that title. She's the Master Weaver.
Master Weaver. Wow. I am at a loss for words. I might start crying here. Delayed crying.
Start crying.
But just Martha's wisdom in her sharing her stories about how she got into the film industry and the stories about, you know, how each of the characters are parts of her, and even the story about her sharing about her husband and that circumstance there, like, wow.
And about her dad's.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, that's one thing that I took from her, is her fearlessness to put herself out there.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
They always say, write what you know. Well, oh my word, she wrote what she knew.
Mm-hmm.
And she put such a depth and a sincerity and a value on those lessons that she has learned, and she's not afraid to put them out there and let us learn from them.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible. It's incredible.
Yeah. I think that's why our stories work so well, is because they are personal and they are meaningful, not only to the audience, but to her too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we hope you enjoyed our interview with Martha Williamson, creator of Signs Still Delivered, executive producer of Touched by an Angel. And
we sure did.
Yes, we did. And where can we watch the next installment? Who wants to give a shout out to next week's episode? Movie.
Hallmark Movies and Mysteries. On October 7th.
Favorite streaming service, Philo Friendly.
Yes, Philo Friendly, 8 Central, 9 Eastern, I believe is the time.
Don't forget, in January of 2022, there is going to be the place where you can meet so many of these lovely people at the Rama Drama Convention in West Palm Beach, Florida.
Woo!
The plan is that the three of us will be there.
So yes,
we hope that you can come and join us. So
fingers crossed.
Rama Drama Official, and get that info. But Crystal, Jeff, Kristen,
Eric,
Zach, and Gregory, they're all gonna be there. So what a treat that will be for the Postables.
It's gonna be a fun time, y'all. Until next time.
Until next time.
Until next time. Bye, guys.
Bye, guys. Bye.